First of all, wonderful job in the NLCS. Wonderful job this year, as always. But I wanted to ask you, because I've seen a kid emerge with the Chicago Cubs, and I just haven't watched a lot of National League Baseball. This Javier Baez kid, how good is he?
Well, he's exceptional, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And Dean, I was talking to an executive recently who said that he thinks that Baez could actually win a Gold Glove at three different positions, at shortstop, second base, or in center field. He's that good. And I think we have seen actually during the course of the postseason the outstanding instincts that he has. And he has made a number of plays that just show an uncanny ability to read plays quickly. Joe Maddon described him, the best comparison he could find to him was Magic Johnson from a standpoint of just a sports intellect. You saw it again last night, I believe, on StatCast. The amount of feet that he ran was like 56 feet to charge that bunt that Gonzalez pushed towards second base. Made an amazing throw and play. So he's just an exceptional athlete on so many different levels. And with the bat, we've seen what he can do. He had the huge home run against the Giants. He had another big double last night. So he really... I think Dean has been the breakout star of this postseason, and I think really he has the best years of his career certainly to come.
Yeah, he's been impressive. 3-for-5 last night, scored a run, had a 3 RBIs as well as the Cubs win 8-4 yesterday. That series now 3-2 going back to Wrigley, where they'll try and exercise the spirit of Steve Bartman. They've been here before and not that long ago. And talk a little bit about how important it is for this team, specifically the Chicago Cubs, being on the precipice of getting into the World Series to win this thing at home.
Well, a couple things. I think certainly, and this is going to be a tough task because of the guy they're facing, and Clayton Kershaw, but they should try to avoid a Game 7 because I think you think about how nervous that environment will be. I think right now with the way they've played the last couple days, they're going to come in with a ton of momentum. From that standpoint, it'll be a very festive atmosphere at Wrigley in Game 6. But if the Dodgers get a lead early, and certainly scoring the first run has been really important in the course of the series so far, if the Dodgers get a lead early, it's going to be nervous. It's going to be a very, very nervous game, especially with Kershaw on the mound. And, of course, Rich Hill then in Game 7, the Cubs really didn't hit him very well at all in Game 3. So, I mean, if you're a Dodger fan, there are reasons for you to be optimistic. And if you're a Cubs fan, there are plenty of reasons for you to be nervous, not least of which is the 71-year wait in between World Series appearances and, of course, the 108-year wait between actually World Series championships. So this series, I believe, is far from over. The key thing, though, Dean, is this. The Dodgers need some serious length from Kershaw. Their bullpen has thrown a ton of innings the last couple of days. They've thrown the most innings of any bullpen in the postseason. They've thrown the most innings of any bullpen in the regular season, too, in the entire major leagues, which is really surprising for a very quality team. So they need some more length from Kershaw and certainly Hill then in Game 7 to really help this bullpen, which has been ineffective, especially really for anybody whose name is not Kenley Jansen here, at least the last couple of days.
John, we see a lot of big free agent pitchers signing these big deals. David Price last season, a lot of fans going, ooh, I wouldn't want any piece of that deal. But when the Cubs signed John Lester, that six-year deal worth $155 million for a 31-year-old pitcher, everybody's like, oh, that contract's not going to pay off. Has it already paid off for the Cubs, John?
I think if they win the World Series, George, it's all worthwhile. And clearly they're on the precipice of doing that when you think about where they're at right now. Lester, it's really interesting. You look at the way that he pitches, and his signature pitch is that cutter. He throws that cutter. You see him against lefty hitters in particular, that front door cutter that sort of starts in at their knee and drops over the inside corner of the strike zone. That's an almost impossible pitch to hit with any consistency, especially again against left-handed hitters. So I think we're seeing in Lester's case, he may be different than Price, different than Greinke, is a different style of pitcher. He doesn't rely as much on power as those other guys. He already had to, I think, figure out where maybe that next phase of his career was going to be. He still throws hard. I mean, the cutter's a hard pitch. It's up around 90 miles an hour. He still throws a four-seamer in the 92-93 range, so he still has very powerful stuff. But he has figured out how to pitch with that cutter, which really has been the game changer for him because there's not even that much of a difference between the four-seam velocity and his cutter velocity. So he is an extraordinary pitcher. He's already evolved, and I think he'll be able to sustain this level of success, I believe, for the next couple of years. So he is the perfect guy to have on the top of that rotation. Hendricks, of course, after him, and Arrieta, and Lackey. This is a very, very balanced rotation, one that I think is really, if they advance and face the Indians, with all the Indians' injuries and concerns there with Carrasco and Salazar and Bauer with the finger, as we know, I think the Cubs will have a pretty pronounced starting rotation advantage, I believe, in the World Series.
Yeah, we thought the Jays did too, and that didn't go well, John.
Very true. We had that conversation last week.
Yeah. John Morosi, our guest, MLB insider and Fox Sports insider. Let me ask you a couple of questions in regards to the Toronto Blue Jays. The postmortem started yesterday. Everybody started making the rounds. John Gibbons said he had a wish list. It included more balance, left-handed bat, some speed, like to get younger, like to be more athletic, like to be faster. And then you look at the free agent tracker. If you go to Sport Track and it's all there, it's thin. I mean, you know, if you're looking at doing something in free agency, that's one thing to address some of those issues. But if you're looking at doing it by trading, that's something different. What do you see in the future in as far as addressing those needs for balance, some speed, and some athleticism when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, Dean, I think the Jays really have a long list of things they have to look at with this lineup. You look at the outfield right now. I think Pilar, I think he is a question in center field going forward because they just need some more offense. They need some more left-handed bats. And so if you could maybe improve your outfield there to get a leadoff hitter who bats left-handed and plays center field, you've got to do it. I think Pilar, from that standpoint, I don't think it's a guarantee that he's back next year. I think if you look at Charlie Blackmon, you look at Adam Eaton, who actually might even be better in right field, Ender Inciarte with Atlanta. I think Blackmon, Eaton, and Ciarte, those are names to watch very closely because I think the Jays have enough talent to make that deal happen. Again, Ciarte, the Braves are talking up a lot about how they want to keep him in the long term. We'll see. I think that they're still of the mind that they can make a deal if it makes sense. So I think those are some names to watch. Also, you know, as we watch the NLCS unfold, Josh Reddick I still think fits the Jays to a certain level. He could play some right field for them if Bautista leaves. I think, guys, the big question they have to answer is, are they really going to offer Bautista the qualifying offer? $17.2 million is a lot of money. And I think on a per annum basis, I think Bautista might be a $12 or $15 million a year player right now. And so if that's the case, would he consider accepting that amount of money? So that's something they really have to consider if they actually truly want him back. If they're going to actually make him that offer, I think it's a very, very difficult decision for them because I think, frankly, guys, best case scenario from their standpoint is probably Bautista rejects it and they pick up the draft pick and maybe get a little younger, more athletic with that position. But to get that draft pick, you have to take that risk of making that offer. I think he would still probably reject it because he wants that multi-year deal. But it's something you really have to consider, I think, very, very closely.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, we've been talking about that. The silence around Jose Bautista has been almost deafening. Everybody in the driving the narrative of will Edwin sign, no one's really discussing the possibility of Jose, which I find very interesting. A huge departure from the start of the season when he showed up to training camp screaming about how much money he wanted and there was no negotiating. So, but he's played himself into that, and I'm sure he knows it. What do you think the Toronto Blue Jays want from Edwin if they do qualify him?
Well, I think in the case
not Edwin, Jose. Jose, what do you think what do they want from, like, if they qualified him for the draft pick, would they be kind of, you know, keeping their hand behind their back with their fingers crossed going, God, please don't accept that qualifying offer?
Well, you know, it's a great question because we have seen only three acceptances of the qualifying offer in the history of this current agreement. So three acceptances, and they were all this past year. You know what, I think that Bautista probably in his own right feels as though he is worth a multi-year deal. I think that's how he would think about it. I think the team, again, I think they're ready to move on. I really and truly believe the Blue Jays front office right now is ready to move on from Jose Bautista. That's what I believe. Might they still offer him the qualifying offer? Sure, perhaps. But
Would you be surprised if they didn't?
No, I would not because I don't think they want him back. my honest opinion right now. Whatever they want to say publicly, I don't think they want him back. I think they want to be younger. I think they want to be more left-handed. And Bautista is an older right-handed hitter who didn't really have that great of a season. So when you look at all those factors, I don't think Now, granted, if it's at a cut rate deal, maybe they would have interest. But I just don't think he fits with the type of club they want to have. I think he's been a phenomenal player for this team. He belongs on a level of excellence. He helped bring baseball back in Toronto on a very high level. I just don't think that their front office right now sees him as a big part of their future. I think that they are grateful for what he's done. Certainly, if you talk to Paul Beeston now, Seth Alpless, they would tell you the same thing. But I just think it's a different era, and this is one of those first key decisions by Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins where we're going to get a sense of exactly how badly they want him back. And it's my expectation, guys, my sense of the way they're doing business right now, they don't want him back at much of a high salary, if at all.
Do they want Edwin Encarnacion back?
Yes, I think that they would certainly want him back. I think that Edwin is one of the most productive hitters in baseball. You look at his reliable home run production. I think that they would consider very strongly him coming back, and they probably want to. It's an interesting team right now, guys. You look at the big picture here. Upton didn't really hit. Pilar didn't really hit in the second half. Carrera had a good couple weeks. Smoke didn't really hit in the second half after signing his extension. There's a lot of questions there. I mean, that is basically like 4 to 5 spots where you don't know what their team is going to be at some pretty important offensive positions right now, and that's hoping that Travis comes back healthy. So you're seeing how this whole thing can turn pretty quickly. They've got a lot of work ahead of them, and I think that part of it too, guys, is they've got to balance their expectations out. They can't really, I don't think, chase certainly Bautista and even Edwin to a certain extent with a ton of money and sinking a whole bunch of money into that one position when they really have a number of different holes they have to address. And this is a team with a number of offensive holes right now. I know we're not used to saying that about the Jays, but it's true right now. They've got to address a number of things right now, and I think it's going to be a very, very busy offseason for that regard.
So let me ask you this, and I guess the dominoes have to fall before they start looking at improving this team outside the organization, and so you decide what to do with Edwin. Will that kind of, I guess, for a lack of a better term, will that give us an indication as to what they're going to do at first base? Because you know Justin Smoke is not an option at first base. I'm sorry, he's just not. He's just, you know, he's a very weak hitting insurance policy, which is fine. And defensively, he's real good. But I wanted to kind of ask you, in regards to Joey Votto, will the decision on what to do with Edwin possibly dictate as to whether or not they'd be serious about going out and getting someone like Joey Votto?
I think it's a great question, Dean. And to me, Votto is a legitimate possibility. The Reds just signed a new television rights deal, so maybe they're not quite as desperate to trade him as they would have been a few months ago. I still think they would move him, and I still think that a big amount of their interest in moving him is just getting out of the salary. I don't think the Jays would have to give up their absolute best prospects to get him, or their best young players, I should say. I think that if they're willing to say, listen, we've got money, we're willing to take on a whole bunch of money, We can make this work from a financial standpoint. I think the Reds would have some flexibility on what the players are coming back. I think this deal is a very intriguing one. Of course, Votto has the no trade protection, so his opinion on this matters a lot, and we'll see what he would want to do. But to me, guys, it's a very interesting possibility, and at the very least, they would have some degree of cost certainty relative to what Encarnacion would be for a slightly younger player. So it's a really interesting thought, and I think that there will be some legs to this idea. Will it happen? Certainly, it's hard to say there's a better than 50-50 chance because there's so many different elements there, but I think it is one of many possibilities right now for a team that, as we talked about, and you pointed out, Dean, has a number of offensive concerns right now.
Is there a world where Edwin Encarnacion and Joey Votto are both Blue Jays?
I don't think so. Okay. I think that's probably a stretch because that's two franchise player contracts, and everything we saw with Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins last offseason is that they wanted to balance things out, and they did so successfully with the pitching staff. And we talked about this a lot basically 1 year ago right now. They did not retain David Price. They spread the money around. They signed Happ and Estrada, and it worked out really well. So I think that they're actually in a good spot because their rotation is somewhat set, I mean, barring injury, of course, so they can really, really focus on the lineup, which certainly needs some addressing. But I just don't see the money there for Encarnacion and Votto. And again, I think Bautista, is unlikely to return. I think unless they give him that qualifying offer and he accepts it, which would surprise me, I don't see him coming back on a multi-year deal. I think that the only way he comes back is if he either accepts the qualifying offer if they make it, or if it's a reduced salary that the Jays feel as though it's certainly on their terms and it's very favorable from their standpoint to bring him back.
John, we threw the name out Marcus Stroman yesterday because of all those holes offensively that they need to fill. Could that be a guy the Blue Jays would potentially look at moving? And what would be his value out there?
Well, it's a great question because I think you look at the way that the market is set right now. Remember this, and this is something we'll talk about a lot during the wintertime. There is not a lot of good free agent pitching out there at all. I mean, the free agent pitching market is like zero almost from the standpoint of high-end one- or two-type starters. So Stroman is a very interesting case. And I mentioned Charlie Blackmon to you. I mentioned Inciarte. Those are – I'm not saying straight up because I think Stroman's a very valuable player. But I think if the Jays are willing to put him into a deal and then maybe get a couple players back, the likes of Blackmon, the likes of Inciarte, Eaton, those are all teams that need pitching. And I would imagine they would have a lot of interest in Marcus Stroman. So that's a great thought. I think it's something that we'll talk, you know, certainly in the next couple of weeks. The GM meetings happen shortly after the World Series is over. You'll get a sense for where the markets are at that point in time. But it's a great thought, and it's one that I think will be fleshed out probably here in the next few weeks.
Do you think Edwin's back with the team? You said you don't think Jose is, but do you think Edwin is?
I don't. I know because I think he would like to come back. I do. I just think there's going to be profound interest in him externally, and I think there's going to be enough interest in him that he goes somewhere else. I don't think it's a – again, I think there's a better chance of him coming back than Bautista. But I'm a believer now, guys, that when players get to free agency, with the money in the game being the way it is, and if they haven't really, and we know in Edwin's case, there was basically no dialogue all season long about an extension. Yeah, I just think it makes more sense that he leaves than stays. I think it's a better chance for him to stay than Jose, but I think my guess is by opening day 2017, both of them are probably playing somewhere else.
Indians have the 24th lowest payroll opening day this year, $86 million. The Toronto Blue Jays 17th, 112. Knowing what the Indians have done thus far, will Mark Shapiro be trying to, you know, sell the Toronto Blue Jays on, you know, we don't need to overspend. We don't need to go out and sign some big free agents. We don't need to take on big contracts. Or is this on a case-by-case basis and has you know, what the Toronto Blue Jays have done for this organization, and not the organization, but, you know, corporately and financially, has it opened the eyes to having a competitive team means you got to invest in that team? And do you think they will do so more to an extent than they have in the past?
Well, I think that there are two parts to that. Number one, Mark Shapiro's philosophical bend is what you're seeing in Cleveland right now. And to an extent, I'll use the Price versus Estrada and Happ example from last November too. That's the type of decision he wants to make. He wants to build a culture. He talks about sustainability. He talks about building from within. All the things that he touched on basically almost a year ago today, or whenever it was that he came on and had his introductory press conference in Toronto. I mean, basically, nothing that's happened over the last year has changed his philosophy. And I think that the Cleveland success is probably fortified that a little bit. The one thing, though, is that we have to remember about pro sports being pro sports, especially in a non-salary cap world. If ownership gets excited about Encarnacion or a Votto trade, guess what? The plan changes. And sometimes there could be adjustments made to the plan based on the fan base's interest and passion in one player. And that's why I do think Encarnacion, because he is so productive still. He is such a key part of this organization that if the ownership looks at it and says, listen, we understand losing Bautista. He's 36 years old, and his production declined this year. We get that. But Edwin, we need someone that hits home runs, that excites the fans, that has a real relationship with the fan base the way Edwin does. So that's why I think that the core of the team will continue to have a quote-unquote Cleveland look to it. But I think that what the Jays will be able to do that Cleveland hasn't been able to do is those one or two exceptions. And I think in this case it would probably be one. It's not going to be both. It would be either or, Votto or Edwin. where ownership says, listen, either Votto, a great story, you know, Toronto kid comes home, lefty bat, all that stuff, great fit, or it's Edwin coming back. I think that those are the circumstances where you can have that sort of, for lack of a better term, like the basketball analogy, like the box in one. Okay, mm-hmm. You have your box, and then there's like the one thing that's the outlier. I think we could maybe see Toronto's payroll look a little bit like that here in years to come.
John, we heard that crazy story this season that maybe the Angels should explore trading Mike Trout because their farm system is so barren. They have zero pitching, and they're an aging team, especially with Albert Pujols there. Is that even on the radar that the Angels would explore trading Mike Trout?
I don't think so. I think Mike Trout, I'd be stunned if he was traded. I think we'll certainly, it'll be a big topic at the GM meetings because everybody's going to wonder about it. But I would be very surprised, very surprised. I think he is like the one thing that's right about the Angels right now. And let's not forget, they are still in L.A. or at least south of L.A. and they're in a major market. And with the Dodgers' success, I think trading Trout would be a capitulation on their standpoint that I don't think they're really willing to make right now.
The real question here is, will Darren Barney be back with the Toronto Blue Jays, John?
That's a great question. I think it's very possible.